Come.
Come.
Whoever you are.
Come with your hurts.
Your imperfections.
Your places that feel raw and exposed.
Come.
Come.
Whoever you are.
Come with your strengths that the world shudders to hold.
Come with your wild imaginings of a better world.
Come with your hopes that it seems no one wants to hear.
Wanderer.
Worshipper.
Lover of leaving.
We will make a place for you.
We will build a home together.
Ours is no caravan of despair.
We will walk together.
Come yet again, come. Good morning.
Morning.
Samsara. Samsara is the endless cycle of rebirth and death. Rebirth and death. In the many different religious threads of religion in India, it's woven into one thing we call Hinduism, but really it's many different religious threads comprise Hinduism. But in Hinduism, samsara is the word that represents the endless cycle of rebirth and death, rebirth and death. Now, people have a natural, maybe, fear of death. It's kind of natural to fear death. And you might take comfort that after one dies, one is reborn again. But to take comfort in samsara would be the wrong thing. Because it's an endless cycle. It's not something you want to do over. It's an endless cycle of do-overs again and again. It's not something people look forward to in the Hindu tradition. Think of your favorite food. Now think of having to eat it and only it endlessly. Let's say that strawberry licorice is your thing. And I say that because about 2 months ago, Bob Pop came to a finance meeting with a bag of licorice that was like this big. It was huge. And he obviously wanted to get rid of it because next week at the board meeting, he came to the board meeting with that same bag of licorice. But let's say strawberry licorice is your thing. So you have it for breakfast. Great, it's yummy. What's for lunch? Strawberry licorice. And then you work all day long and you come home from work and your beloved makes you a meal. And what's that meal? Strawberry licorice. The Falcons are on. You want a snack? Strawberry licorice. Breakfast, you get the picture. You don't want to eat that much licorice, even if it's your favorite thing. And that's what samsara is. It's an endless set of do-overs, rebirth and death, because you're not getting it right. You're not getting it right. When you finally get it right, when you're faultless, you transcend samsara and you enter moksha. Buddhists call it nirvana. It's like heaven. In Islam, it would be paradise. How's this mic working? Am I okay? We good? Can we hear? We're working on the new sound, so we'll see how it goes. Okay, karma is what dictates how one moves through this endless cycle of samsara. Really, you're probably thinking now, wait a minute, he first talked about samsara, moksha, nirvana, karma. I thought this was a Unitarian Universalist Day of Atonement sermon, you know, out of the Judaic tradition. What's he doing way over here in the Hindu tradition? But I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Fear not. So anyway, karma is, again, what dictates how one moves through this endless wheel of rebirth and death, samsara. Karma, simply put, can be thought of as cause and effect. Cause and effect. Emerson writes in his essay, Compensation, cause and effect, means and ends, seed and fruit cannot be severed. For the effect already blooms in the cause. The end pre-exists in the means, the fruit in the seed. Karma maintains that all actions will re-echo and reverberate back onto the doer. So doing good deeds eventually will lead to good effects. bad deeds eventually lead to bad effects. There's a sense of justice to it, that ultimately you get what you give. You get what you give. Sufi teacher Hazrat Inayat Khan describes the karma associated with our wrongdoings that he calls sin. He writes, "Sin can never make one happy. Even when there is pleasure in it for the time being, it would re-echo, and the re-echo of a false note is never pleasing to the musical ear." So I was reading this magazine a couple months ago, and I came upon a really interesting idea by this religious writer, Richard Smalley. The idea is this. If our actions in the karmic cause and effect associated with our actions keeps us on this endless cycle, samsaric cycle of rebirth and death, the only way to transcend it and achieve moksha is through forgiveness. Again, if our actions and our cause and the karmic cause and effect associated with our actions keeps us on this endless cycle of rebirth and death, the only way to transcend it and achieve moksha is through forgiveness. Actually, forgiving others first. Forgiving others. Remember, the karma associated with our faults is what keeps us on this endless cycle, this endless wheel. Being faultless doesn't require a do-over. Being faultless allows us to transcend to moksha. But the problem is, we all have faults. That seems to be built in to who we are, inherently. So how could we ever transcend? We all fail. We all have wrongdoings. And we all continue to have faults and wrongdoings. Well, since we already have always have faults, to be faultless kind of means that we've been forgiven for our faults. And that we've repented, that we've atoned for those faults. But if karma is you get what you give, you are entitled to that repentance, that atonement, that forgiveness, only if you have forgiven others first. Only if you've forgiven others first. That, for me, was a big idea. That you're only entitled to really forgiveness if you've forgiven others first. This idea, I believe, is confirmed in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is Judaic commentaries on the Torah. The Mishnah states, "For transgressions against God, the Day of Atonement does not atone. But for transgressions against human beings, against one another, the Day of Atonement does not atone until they have made peace with one another." And I would argue that making peace requires forgiving others first. Forgiving others first. Receiving forgiveness and forgiving oneself. Yom Kippur is the Sabbath of Sabbaths. It begins at sundown on Tuesday. It's the holiest day in the Judaic tradition. It's part of the high holy days of Judaism. The high holy days are kind of outlined in the 23rd chapter of Leviticus. The high holy days begin on the first day of the seventh month of the Judaic calendar. The first day is called Rosh Hashanah. It's the Jewish New Year, the Festival of the Trumpets. The tenth day, beginning sundown on Tuesday, is Yom Kippur. Observing Yom Kippur usually involves three things. One, self-denial and fasting. Two, tzedakah, which is acts of charity. And three, teshuvah, which is repentance, atonement. And although repentance, undertaken in an effort to have right relationships with someone else, probably does involve forgiving others, the majority of the writings that I come across regarding forgiveness, atonement, and repentance. Kind of focus on the seeking of forgiveness, atoning for your faults, seeking forgiveness, seeking repentance. But might perhaps a Unitarian Universalist Day of Atonement tweak this just a little bit? That instead of seeking forgiveness, instead of seeking atonement, instead of seeking repentance, we must become karmically entitled to it first by forgiving others. By forgiving others first. The unconditional forgiveness of others. The unconditional forgiveness of others grants us the opportunity to the unconditional forgiveness for ourselves. Now, I know that can be a tall order. That can be a very tall order. Because many of us have been hurt by others. We've experienced injustice. We've been treated unfairly or abused. And often, sadly, we've been hurt by those who we love the most. Those we've trusted. Our dear friends, members of our own families. It hurts. And we have scars inside and out. As we forgive those who trespass against us, forgive us our trespasses. Perhaps that's how the Lord's Prayer should be written, not the reverse. As we forgive those who trespass against us, forgive us our trespasses. Unconditional forgiveness. Is that a place that we can go? Is that a risk that we can take? Might our inability to forgive prevent us from moving forward? Might our inability to forgive prevent us from moving into the realm of healing? Might our inability to forgive actually be a way of keeping us on this endless wheel of do-overs in this life? In this life? Might our ability to forgive take us to that higher ground, lead us closer to the freedom that frees us from that cycle, and possibly realize moksha or nirvana in this life? I don't know, the answer is for you to decide. Now enter into a spirit of meditation and prayer. Beloved Spirit, may we be mindful of those suffering in our war-torn world. May we be mindful of the plight of the immigrant, the refugee. May we be mindful of those affected by Hurricane Matthew. May we be mindful of those close to home who have little to eat, who have no home or shelter, no refuge. May we be mindful of those struggling with addiction, with those who suffer illness. And in addition to being mindful, may we in some small way actively participate in the tikkun olam, the healing and repair of the world. And may we now enter into a spirit of forgiveness. We have our faults, flaws, we've failed. We've turned away from justice at times, we've hurt others, left things broken. May we realize that this is what it means to be human. We are imperfect, and we now seek atonement. We seek forgiveness from others. Teshuvah, repentance. Yet before we request forgiveness for ourselves, may we now make the very best effort to Return in spirit to those who've trespassed against us. Yes, we can still feel the scars that were cut deeply into us by those who've wronged us, hurt us, and failed us. Yet may we find it in our hearts, despite the scars, the years of pain, to grant them unconditional forgiveness. In this moment, may we take the time to silently grant this forgiveness now.